Another long, awkward pause as they watched the receiving line and thought about what to say next. A breeze blew in their faces and she held her arms close to her chest. He fought the desire to reach over and hold her. It wouldn't work. "You've asked nothing about my life these days," he said. "I'm sorry. I stopped thinking about you a long time ago. I can't lie, Neely. You're just not a factor anymore. You were always blunt. Blunt is good. It saves so much time. I sell real estate, live alone with a dog, date a girl I really don't like, date another with two children, and I really miss my ex-wife." "What caused the divorce?" "She cracked up. She miscarried twice, the second one in the fourth month. I made the mistake of telling her I once paid for an abortion, and she blamed me for losing the babies. She was right. The real cost of an abortion is much more than the lousy $300 at the clinic. I'm sorry." 10 years to the week after Screamer and I made our little road trip to Atlanta, my wife had the second miscarriage, a little boy. "Neely, I really want to leave now." "I'm sorry," he said. They sat on the front steps again. The lights were off. Mr. and Mrs. Lane were asleep. It was after 11. "I think you should go now," Cameron said after a few minutes. "You're right. You said earlier that you think about me all the time, Neely. I'm curious as to why." "I had no idea how painful a broken heart can be until my wife packed up and left. It was a nightmare. For the first time, I realized what you'd suffered through. I realized how cruel I'd been." "You'll get over it. Takes about 10 years. "Thanks." He walked down the sidewalk, then turned around and walked back. "How old is Jack?" he asks. 37. "Then, statistically, he should die first. Give me a call when he's gone. I'll be waiting." "Sure you will, Neely." "I swear, isn't it comforting to know that someone will always be waiting for you?" "I really hadn't thought about it." He leaned down and looked her in the eyes. "Can I kiss you on the cheek?" "No." "There's something magical about the first love, Cameron. Something I'll miss forever. Goodbye, Neely." "Can I say I love you?" "No. Goodbye, Neely." Friday. Messina mourned thoroughly and collectively. By 10 on Friday morning, the shops and cafes and offices around the square were locked. All students were dismissed from school. The courthouse was closed. The factories on the edges of town were shut down, a free holiday, though few felt like celebrating. Mal Brown placed his deputies around the high school, where by mid-morning the traffic was bumper to bumper on the road to Rakefield. By 11, the homestands were almost full, and the ex-players, the former heroes, were gathering and milling around the tent at the 50-yard line. Most of them wore their green game jerseys, a gift to every senior, and most jerseys were stretched tighter around the midsections. A few, the lawyers and doctors and bankers, wore sports coats over their game shirts, but the green was visible. From the bleachers up above, the fans looked down at the tent and the field and enjoyed the chance to identify their old heroes. Those with retired numbers caused the most excitement. "There's Roman Armstead, number 81, played for the Packers. There's Neely, number 19. The senior class string quartet played under the tent, and the PA system lifted its sounds from end zone to end zone. The town kept coming. There would be no casket. Eddie Rake was already in the ground. Miss Lila and her family arrived without ceremony and spent a half hour hugging former players in front of the tent. Just before noon, the priest appeared, and then a choir, but the crowd was far from settled. When the home bleachers were full, they began lining the fence around the track. There was no hurry. This was a moment Messina would cherish and remember. Rake wanted his boys on the field, packed around the small podium near the edge of the tent. And he wanted them to wear their jerseys, a request that had been quietly spread in his last days. A tarp covered the track, and several hundred folding chairs had been arranged in a half moon. Around 12:30, Father McCabe gave the signal, and the players began packing into their seats. Miss Lyle and the family sat in the front rows. Neely was between Paul Curry and Silo Mooney, with 30 other members of the 1987 team around them. Two were dead, and six had disappeared. The rest couldn't make it. A bagpipe at the north goalpost began wailing, and the crowd became still. Silo was wiping tears almost immediately, and he was not alone. As the last melancholy notes drifted across the field, the mourners were softened up and ready for some serious emotion. Father McCabe slowly approached the makeshift podium and adjusted the microphone. "Good afternoon," he said in a high-pitched voice that broke sharply through the stadium speakers and could be heard half a mile away. "And welcome to our celebration of the life of Eddie Rake. On behalf of Mrs. Lila Rake, her three daughters, eight grandchildren, and the rest of the family, I welcome you and say thank you for coming."